Good afternoon, and welcome to the Jewish Policy Center Extra Webinar. I am Shoshana Bryan, Senior Director of the JPC, and your host. There are a lot of you out there. Thank you for logging on short notice. We didn't have any advance warning about the precipitating event, but we do know where to get useful information. We are going both for background and speculation today, and I think for both of those, it's best to do it with an expert in the subject at hand. That would be our guest, Dr. Stephen Bryan. This is going to be a short program, unless you chime in with lots of questions, and you know how to do that, so if you've got them, send them. But we want to give you a sense of where we are, how we got here, and conceivably where we're going, although, frankly, nobody knows where we're going. As you know, the JPC does not do battlefield updates, so we're going to talk about some things the media missed and talk around the subject of what exactly blew up in Tehran. And now our guest, Stephen Bryan. For those of you who asked, yes, he is my husband, and no, that's not why he's here. He's here because he is an expert. See, I made him laugh. This is good. He is an expert in security, strategy, and technology. If you read his Substack column, you know that he spent an enormous amount of time studying Iran's weapon capability, as well as those of China and Russia. He's held senior positions on Capitol Hill, the Department of Defense, and as the president of a large multinational defense and technology company. Steve was the senior director of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee and served in the Pentagon under President Ronald Reagan. He was deputy undersecretary of defense for trade security policy, and he was also the founder and first director of the Defense Technology Security Administration. It did not fit on a business card. He received the highest award of the Defense Department on two occasions. He presently writes for a lot of publications, and you see him periodically in our Insight columns. His books include Technology, Security, and National Power, and Security for Holy Places. And as I said, you can find him on Substack. His column there is called Weapons and Strategy, and it is as straightforward as it sounds. And now, Stephen Bryan, the floor is yours. Start us, if you will, with the Europeans.
Okay, I'll try. Thank you, Shoshana, for the introduction. I think the important thing is that prior to the U.S. operation taking place in Iran, there was a diplomatic effort underway. And the last part of that was a meeting in Geneva with the Iranian foreign minister and what's called the E3, which is, you would guess, England or UK, France and Germany, plus the EU, which sent their deputy head to the meeting. She's a Latvian. She's not very happy with Russians. But in any case, the idea of the meeting was to find a diplomatic solution. And in fact, the Europeans offered something that was probably already unacceptable to the US, which was some kind of enhanced inspection of Iran's nuclear assets instead of what Mr. Trump has called for, clearly called for, which was the end of all enrichment of uranium in Iran and the dismantlement of the Iranian nuclear facilities. Anyway, the Iranian foreign minister simply wasn't interested, told them so, said that the only way they would even bother to have any diplomatic process was that if Israel stopped attacking Iran and if Israel was punished for what it did. It was a pretty tough language. And that's what happened. Basically, the meeting broke down. The Europeans found out that the diplomatic process was a failure, but they're still at it even today, I might add. Never look failure in the mouth and not try again. But there's not going to, in my opinion, there's no diplomatic solution at present with the current Iranian regime. So that's what happened.
So let me ask you, though, the EU representative said today that there is only a diplomatic solution. There cannot be a war solution, cannot be a battlefield solution. Am I
wrong
in
thinking?
Person,
she's the same person who calls for the destruction of the Russians fighting in Ukraine because she's a Latvian, very right-wing Latvian very anti-Russian, anti-Soviet before that. She's fairly young. But in any case, she's a hardliner against Russia. But when it comes to Iran, another matter entirely, negotiations will work. It's painful in a way to for people to with a straight face to make statements like that.
It's painful. It's also hypocritical. You know,
It is.
how can they
Yes, it
think that a
is.
battlefield solution is possible in one place and a battlefield solution is unacceptable in the other place?
Because she's hell-bent on the destruction of Russia. That's all she cares about. The rest of it's not important. She's just mouthing the European line.
Okay, so talk about Russia then. Lots of people are anti-Russian now about Ukraine and kind of about things in general. But Russia has been one of the big supporters of Iranian plans for things and Iranian weapons and Iranian everything else. And the Iranians also have supplied drones and other things to Russia for the war in Ukraine. So,
Drones and missiles, yeah.
and missiles. Okay, I missed the missiles. So talk about where the Russians are in this.
Between a rock and a hard place, actually, in real terms, Putin has a lot at stake in Ukraine. And he has a lot at stake in the process that's going on now, which is to try and find some grounds for reconciliation with the Trump administration and with the US in general. Because he wants NATO out of Ukraine. And he thinks only the US is going to be able to manage that. If for some reason the Russians actually started to supply Iran with weapons or even moved equipment and troops to Iran, it would be a whole new game. And he knows it. He knows that that would trash his operations in Ukraine, and it could lead even to the intervention of US air forces or other, or even troops. So I think he has to be very careful here. Yes, they're verbally saying how much they love the Iranians, how horrible Israel was to do this, how rotten the United States was to bomb. It was illegal. It was immoral. You can go on, whatever you can think of, they've been throwing it out there. But will they do anything? I doubt it. I seriously doubt it because it would be fatal for them. They would lose their whole grip on Ukraine, and he knows it. So I don't think the Russians are likely to intervene.
Is that also true of China? Unlikely to do anything? Apparently, the Chinese are taking people out of Iran, their people out of Iran.
Well, the Chinese, of course, are in a bad position too, because they have nothing there really to fight with. I mean, there's no Chinese anything there, and they don't have that kind of long range reach that the United States has. They simply don't, neither with their Navy or their Air Force. So what can they do? They're shipping reportedly, even before the US attack, they're shipping missile fuel and other things to the Iranians. There's a report that some transport planes landed, but it isn't clear whether they were offloading or loading up with people and equipment. So it's very blurry. But I think generally speaking, the Chinese, and by the way, with the Iranians saying they're going to close the Gulf of Hormuz and block oil transit, well, the first victim of that, the major victim of that's China, because they won't get their oil, and it won't be easy for them to get it anywhere else. So I think the Chinese probably are pushing diplomacy as some sort of solution, but they have very little to hang on, because they have not very good relations these days with Israel, because they've been supplying rocket missile material and drone material to the Iranians in heavy amounts, something the Israelis should have seen long ago but didn't. I think they're just not going to do anything. I think the only one thing that the Chinese, I should qualify this in one sense, is to cause trouble in the Taiwan Straits or with Taiwan itself. But that also is not a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination. And now that they've seen what B-2s can do, they may want to rethink.
So conceivably, although you're suggesting it's not likely, conceivably they could cause trouble on the Pacific side to distract people from what's going on in the Middle East.
or try to split U.S. forces to somehow, but I don't think they can do that. I think they're just going to sit it out, in my opinion. Calling for a diplomatic solution, probably privately trying to tell the Iranians to back off stopping traffic in the Gulf because that will Persian Gulf because that will destroy China's access to oil, and push for some common sense. There's not going to be any common sense with the current Iranian regime, but they'll still try.
So, at least theoretically, the Europeans have nothing to add to this, nothing to help with. They can be a distraction. The Russians have nothing to add to this, and the Chinese have nothing to add to this.
Right.
So, is this really the US and Israel together, and Iran on the other side? I noticed that none of the Iranian proxies had anything to say except Hezbollah. Hezbollah said, well, they're really proud of the Iranians and they can do this by themselves. In other words, don't look to
Goodbye and
us
good
to do
luck.
it. Goodbye and good luck.
Well, I mean, because they're also at risk, Hezbollah and Hamas both, because they depend on Iran for their weapons and aren't going to be any for a while. So I think that's a big blow to them. And if they start something, they can't finish it because they're not going to get resupplied. So anyway,
That's
they've been really weakened. So.
a really important point, it seems to me, the resupply thing. Since they do get weapons from China and from Russia, if they can't get them, it lowers the possibilities. There was an article this weekend, though, that said that Iran had moved the enriched uranium, that it wasn't in Fordo and it wasn't in the places that we bombed. And then somebody else said, wait a second. Israel knows everything that's going on in Iran. Israel, they had a drone base in Iran, for heaven's sakes. They know where people live in Iran. So, how likely is it that Israel would not see the movement of the enriched uranium out of the plants to some other place?
Well, I imagine they're stashing some of it elsewhere because that would make sense from a strategic, even before the bombing and all that, just from a basic security point of view, spread it around so that no one can target it so easily. So I imagine they did some of that. Whether the report was, I read the report, I'm not sure I believe it, that they ran to Fordo just before the bombing and emptied the place. Highly unlikely. But the real problem of Fordo was not what was there already. The real problem was further enrichment of the 60% uranium to weapons grade 90% uranium, which is a big problem because they have the huge facility. Well, they had a huge facility under Fordo and in Natanz and in Isfahan and elsewhere. So that destroying all that is a big deal.
So that could leave them with piles of 60% uranium and an inability to get it to where they wanted it to be.
Right now, yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
Well,
I
that
think that's right.
puts off the problem for a little while.
Well, I think President Trump was absolutely right to go after those assets because, as he said, Iran can't have a bomb. And this mission, let's call it a mission operation, was designed to make sure they can't have a bomb. And I think it was very successful, at least from what we know. And of course, we're depending on satellite images and statements from the Pentagon and that sort of thing. But from what I can gather, the people at the Pentagon are extremely happy with the results. Extremely happy. Couldn't be happier. They're dancing down the hallways.
And I would point out for those people or to those people who didn't want American boots on the ground, they're not. And people who didn't want Americans to die in Iran, either for Israel or for Iran, they didn't. No one was killed in this raid, no boots on the ground. So if the Pentagon guys are dancing, it seems that that's because they got what they wanted.
They did a surgical job. They destroyed these facilities. The bunker buster, the 30,000-pound bunker buster is a hell of a weapon, and they dropped 12 of them on Fordo and two of them in Isfahan. And they put deep holes and big explosions. It's a tandem warhead. So the first part of the warhead blows the initial hole, and then the second part explodes the second time. So it's the same idea that's used in anti-tank weapons, but on a massive scale. These things weigh 30,000 pounds, not little. And the B-2 can only carry two of them. So it's and has to be refueled many times. So it was a very clockwork operation because they flew from the United States all the way to Iran, did their business, and then flew all the way back. So I don't know how many refuelings, but I would say between four and six each way.
So, if you're China, you have to take that very seriously, don't you?
It should shake the Chinese very hard because there's two issues. Nobody shot at our B-2s. There was no air defenses that fired at our B-2s. The Iranians didn't put any airplanes in the air if they had any left. The Israelis destroyed a bunch to challenge them. They didn't even know they were there. And the Russians had provided them with some modern radars that are supposed to pick up stealth bombers. Well, they didn't work. It's also a big lesson for the Russians. It's not
So,
just it shouldn't be just lost on the Chinese. I mean, it's a big lesson for the Russians too, because Russians have not done stealth in any serious way because they can't.
this changes the American view of offense and defense in the world.
I
And
think
I'm
so.
going to turn to Israel in a minute. But if you look at the lessons, we've been telling ourselves for the last umpteen years that our military is insufficient to the problem. Our military is behind the times. Our military is incapable. Turns out that's not true. If you pick a mission and you apply certain assets to the mission, it turns out we're rather capable. Are we going to change the way we talk about this now?
Well, you have to ask the left, the geniuses on the left who keep propagandizing about the lack of preparedness and the poor quality of our troops and the rotten Air Force and so on. We have a hell of a good Air Force. This is proof of it. I mean, yes, it's an expensive one. A B-2 bomber costs $2 billion. It's not cheap, but it does the job. And I don't think there's any match for it anywhere. With air defenses or with any kind of air defense right now. So it was impressive. And we're building a newer bomber, which will essentially replace the B-2 eventually. So we're well along in this. A long time ago, people said, well, maybe the age of the bomber is over. Can't get through the air defenses of the enemy. It's going to be shot down. We don't need them. Let's get rid of them. And that was a serious conversation, but that was before stealth. And I think stealth is, stealth has changed the game. Now, eventually, maybe someone will be able to detect a stealth aircraft effectively. Detecting it means not just seeing it, but being able to hit it. They're two different things. You may see it, but by the time you fire a missile at it, it may be somewhere else. And you have to have very, very good radar or other means of detecting and being able to aim at these weapons. And they're flying at thousands of feet above the ground, so they're going to be hard to find. Anyway, we lost no airplanes. The Israelis have not lost a single airplane. They've also are flying stealth jets, the F-35, among other jets. So I think overall, we've learned a big lesson in terms of how you do air defense and how you do air operations and how you do precision bombing. All of that, I think, is extremely instructive. And those lessons are going to be learned very, very quickly by our enemies as much as by our own people.
Well, it's one thing for our enemies to learn a lesson. It's another thing for them to be able to cope with what they've just seen.
Well, right now they're not in a position to do it.
And I would say the same is true of what Israel's enemies have learned. So the Israelis took out the Iranian air defense, and then they went on a bombing spree that took out the things that they wanted to take out. And they were quite precise, and we were quite precise. And I have to say, there was a lot of coordination between our precision and their precision, right? For those who worried that Israel was doing something the US didn't approve of, or that the US didn't know what Israel was doing, it seems to me that all of this had to be very very closely coordinated between the US and Israel.
I think that that's was CENTCOM's main job, was coordinating, but also the U.S. Warships, especially the destroyers that we had there with the anti-aircraft capabilities, played a positive role in sharing some of the burden of knocking out the missile barrages that were fired at Israel from Iran. So there was a lot of coordination. All this, I think, from the start, this was coordinated. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And no one's going to really talk about it too much because it's something you don't want to talk about too much for lots of reasons, political and strategic. But I'm sure that it was very effective.
So, speaking of the political things that come out, we have a bunch of questions here from people who are listening. So, I'm going to ask a couple
Remember,
of
I'm
them.
not very political, so I'll do my
No,
best.
that's right. You're not, and neither are we, and we don't want to be. But there's this little area between, politics and not politics. So the Israelis did what they did, and we did what we did, and that's all fine. And President Trump has said that we're not in it for regime change. Yeah, the Israelis are probably a little more open to regime change than we are. And they have continued their bombing campaign. And today the reports are that they have taken out a number of things that if you're an Iranian person who doesn't like your government or an Iranian woman who doesn't want to be hung for not wearing a hijab, seeing the Basiji headquarters go up in flames, that probably made you fairly happy. But the Israelis appear to be moving beyond taking out the nuclear threats, also taking out the missile threats. They've done missile factories, they've done launch sites, they've done all kinds of things. And they're moving into what could be conceived of as regime change. Could that drive a wedge between the United States and Israel?
No, I don't think so. What they're doing, let's be clear what they're doing and not doing. What they're doing so far are two things. One is they're decimating the IRGC and army leadership in Iran, liquidating as much of that as they can. The second thing that they're doing is trying to break the security lock that the Iranians have on the Iranian people. So when you start to blow up police stations that are hanging police stations that are used to enforce the mullah's rules and to the Irvine prison, which they blew the doors off of this morning. And by the way, there's a great video of that. If you can look on X, you'll see it. I mean, they're weakening the security apparatus of the Iranian regime. Now, that doesn't mean regime change by itself, but it leads to it. They haven't so far attacked the mullahs,
So
although
it,
I wouldn't count that out.
so perhaps the Israelis are doing for the Iranian people what they did for us, kind of paving the way for somebody else to do something. I mean, regime change, it seems to me, has to have some Iranian element. It can't be imposed from
Has
the
to be.
outside.
Yeah, well, the Reza Pahlavi, who is the crown prince in exile, of course.
No, he's the king. I mean,
Oh,
seriously.
he's a legally crown prince. He's never been made king yet.
Oh,
He
sorry.
will be, I
He
think,
will be.
if he gets there. But he's 64 years old. He lives in California. But he says, I've organized a replacement government. I'm ready to go. He's probably the best chance anybody has right now for regime change. I don't know how courageous he is, but I would guess so. The Pahlavis, I was in Iran when it was under the Shah, the former Shah. It wasn't entirely pleasant, and having a bunch of Savak guys ride behind me in a Jeep with Uzis didn't give me a great deal of confidence. But clearly something has to give here, and I just don't think internally that the regime can stand the kind of pressure it's under now, and I think that's what the Israelis are trying to do, put the pressure on them, heavy pressure on them. So I imagine the raids today, which were quite extensive, are just the beginning, and there'll be more.
So the Basiji, clearly the Israeli goal is to get rid of them. But Pahlavi has said that he's been reached out to by members of the Iranian military, the army, not the Basiji Guard. Is it possible that the army flips and becomes a government changer or a protector of the Shah or something else? Do you need the army to do this? It seems to me it would be helpful.
Well, we learned a lesson in Iraq. And the lesson was that if you destroy the army, you're in trouble.
You know, you hope we learned a lesson in Iraq. That I'm just saying, it appears that the president has. I hope we have as a country.
I think we did. I mean, look, the most of the experts, and I'm not among them, but there are plenty of really good experts on Iraq, American and foreign, have said that destroying the army, sending them home was a really bad idea because then some of them just melted into the background, but others joined the Islamists because that's all they could do. And that really has been a problem ever since. I think that if the army can be trustworthy, and that's a big if, and can be convinced to support a change, another big if, then there's a way forward. But I don't know enough about what's going on inside Iran, other than the fact that the Israelis have been able to operate there with quite a lot of impunity. You don't do that unless you have people on the ground helping you. Otherwise, you can't do it. And we know there are local people helping a lot, and I would guess some of them for sure are in the military. They don't want to be destroyed. And they're watching their IRGC cousins get liquidated. I mean, 400 of them were killed today in that bombing of Basij.
So here's another question that relates more to us, perhaps. Listener asks, isn't another major lesson of the last fortnight that missile defense is essential to protect cities, even against missiles with conventional warheads? How are we doing on that? Let's turn to us for a second. Do we have defenses in this country?
The short answer is no. We have a little bit, but mostly no. We have some missiles, air defense missiles on the West Coast in Alaska and in California, Vandenberg Air Force Base, which are designed to shoot down ICBMs coming from North Korea or China. But there's only 40 interceptors. And most of them don't work. It's not very
Ah,
good.
I didn't
So
know that.
we've been trying to fix that, but it's we don't have the Golden Dome that Trump is talking about is one approach to the problem, which is not a city defense. It's a defense that's designed to go after missiles on launch or shortly after launch, not waiting for them to hit terminal air defense to be coming into a city, partly because there's a big shift in the kind of missiles that are available to at least to the Russians and maybe to the Chinese, like the Oreshnik or the Avangard, which is an ICBM, which uses a glide, a hypersonic glide vehicle to attack its targets. Once that glide vehicle's out, it's almost impossible to intercept. So the approach that Mr. Trump is taking and the administration is taking is Golden Dome. The problem is it's going to take many years to do that, and it's fundamentally a space-based defense. As far as terminal defenses are concerned, in the United States, we have very little. We have some terminal air defenses in Poland and Romania. We have Aegis on our destroyers. Which is a pretty good system with that can knock out some long-range missiles, but not hypersonic. And we've been encouraging others like the Japanese to put Aegis ashore in, but they haven't done it. We have THAAD, which is another terminal system, but a good one in the Persian Gulf, and we have THAAD in Korea. So and we have THAAD in Israel. So we have some things out there, we're not without, but we don't have a comprehensive air defense system, and we don't have an integrated air defense system. One of the things that Israelis have pioneered, and I think done a pretty good job, has been integrated air defenses. They've been having some trouble with Iranian hypersonic missiles that have gotten through. So right now it's between 80 and 90% effective, which is pretty good, but not good enough. They have to up their game, and they know it. And they need more interceptors, and they know it. And they need to be able to deal with swarm tactics, which the Iranians have used, which also we need to deal with. So there are things we need to do. I hope that Golden Dome won't be the only solution, but that we'll have other solutions too. Because let me point out that one of the things that has caused a lot of trouble are drones. And drones can be launched from anywhere, from off a transport ship, from a nearby country, or even within the United States. Someone can smuggle them in and use them. So they can cause a lot of damage. And we have nuclear power plants, we have sensitive government installations, we have vital air bases. And trying to find those things is not easy. Ask the Iranians. They didn't find the Israeli ones that were smuggled inside Iran. That's the key point. And so we need to prepare better for those kinds of contingencies.
And right now, we don't seem to be preparing very much. But also, isn't that a response to the isolationists on both sides, left wing and right wing, isolationists who say, well, we're not at war with anybody, and so we don't need. But shouldn't we be, having watched this unfold, shouldn't we be worried about what could happen to us? I mean, the fact that we have big oceans on both sides and we have friendly neighbors, or relatively friendly neighbors anyway, north and south. There's a bigger world out there. Could this change U.S. defense thinking about what we need
It has
and
to,
how to do it?
because it has to. But look, New York could be hit by drones. It's already been hit by transport aircraft, in 9/11, but it could be hit by drones, and it could cause a huge amount of damage and casualties. And that's assuming they're conventional, not nuclear.
See,
So
I.
yeah, so we have to be prepared, and I don't think we're just at the beginning of starting to be sensible about this sort of thing. For years, there was great opposition to missile defenses coming mostly from so-called concerned scientists who were leftist scientists who wanted to support what's called the mad doctrine, mutually assured destruction. And so they thought that if we put up defenses, then we'd have a first strike capability and then we would use it and then there'd be a nuclear war and so forth. And so on. You can play that out any way you want. The main point is that they were successful in preventing us from having any missile defenses in place for years, for many years, from the early 80s all the way up to today. Well, we had enough of that stuff. The handwriting is there. You don't have to look very far. You can look at Iran, you can look at Israel, you can look at Ukraine, you can look at Russia. You can look at North Korea, you can look at all these players, and you realize that the games have changed a lot. And we are behind that curve, behind. And so that's an area we need to work on, I think seriously.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but don't we also have to look at things like Mexico? Not the Mexicans, but there are cartels in Mexico who are heavily armed. Isn't it possible that they could have drone capabilities in Mexico waiting to fire at us? I mean, it's not just superpower stuff. There are threats. One of the things I worry about is there are
Terrorist
threats out
threats.
there that people just don't look at.
Absolutely. I agree. I think that's a threat, especially if they're put under pressure and so decide to take action like that.
Well,
I assume they already have drones.
they are under pressure since we've basically closed the border and we've made it impossible to do a lot of the shipping of their drugs overland. They may be looking for a fight. I don't know. I worry about drones, especially when we watch football games and you see those gorgeous stadiums and or baseball games, and you could imagine the kind of damage they could do.
And there's not much to prevent it. In fact, not anything.
Great. Let's return to the Middle East, shall we? because this is making me nervous, and also because we have a question here. Is Turkey now the Middle East hegemonic wannabe? So if Iran finds itself unable to pursue its regional domination goals, what about Turkey? Do we think about
Well, they
Turkey?
are a wannabe. There's no doubt they're a wannabe. I mean, their first order of priority is to get rid of the Kurds, of course. But beyond that, they have ambitions in the sands, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, all those places, which are Turkic countries in a way. And so they have ambitions there. But then they run up against the Russians in that context. They're also big supporters of Iran. Although they may change their mind about that pretty soon. Yeah, and Turkey's got a big army, has a pretty good air force. It has some advanced defense manufacturing capabilities. It's now building, it claims, a fifth generation fighter like the F-35. We'll see if that happens. But, they're trying. Erdogan is very anti-Israeli, as you know, and not above causing trouble when he can, but he's also not stupid. So, I mean, all the rhetoric aside, he's not going to risk a problem that he can't solve. Let's put it that way. His Air Force doesn't match the Israelis, and
There's
it won't for years. So he has
a
to watch
reason
himself.
for that. So I mentioned another question. I mentioned that Iran's, you can call them allies, but basically they're proxies, haven't really done anything to support the mullahs or support Iran in the war. So we have a question here. What about the Houthis? Have we heard from the Houthis lately?
Yeah, we've heard from them. They
What do we
claim they're
hear?
going to close down. They claim they're going to close down the Red Sea again, but they haven't done it yet. They haven't done
So
anything.
you have the Iranians claiming
I
that
think
they're
they
going to.
should be paid a visit by those B-2s.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I think they should be paid a visit by those B-2s.
Oh, well.
They might stir their anxiety.
So, okay, but you've got Iran then claiming that it's going to shut down the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz. And then you've got the Houthis that claim they're going to shut down the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea. This has major energy implications for a lot of people, less so for us at the moment because we are much closer to energy independence. But couldn't this prompt the Chinese to step in and say, hey, guys, this is enough?
They can't
Because
do
they
anything.
need that.
But they can't do anything. They have no ability.
They have no leverage.
They don't have a navy that's capable of operating that far from home today. They'd like to have. They're working on a blue water navy, but they're not there yet. So they have some aircraft carriers, but I wouldn't worry about them too much. And I don't think they can operate that far from their coast. So they because they're big. Fuel hogs, except for the nuclear one, which doesn't work very well. So I think they're not in a position to do anything much.
So, but I'm not thinking the
I think
Chinese will
they'll
use
beg us
their,
to help.
I'm not thinking of them using their military, but if you're China and you've been supporting Iran all this time, do you have no diplomatic leverage that says, hey, look, guys, if you do that, you cut off your supply
Nobody
of
has
money?
diplomatic leverage with the Iranians.
Thank you.
Zero. They're fanatics. I mean, they're not interested in what you normal people think. They have their own outlook. I don't care if they go down with a ship. What's a ship?
Okay. So the impact they could have on the oil market is only an impact that they see on other people. They're not worried about the
Well, look,
impact on themselves.
they will lose their money
Yeah.
because they won't have any money. So if they want to buy things from China, they can't pay for it. Chinese aren't going to give it away. Even the Chinese won't do that. So I just don't think China is a big factor here, other than they could be screwed by the Iranians if the Iranians actually tried to shut down the Straits of Hormuz. But will they do that? Or are they just yapping? I think they're just yapping.
Could be. Could
But
be.
we'll see. I mean, they could try, but they're so disorganized right now. Their navy is very vulnerable. It could be sunk very quickly. They have these little patrol boats with rockets on them. They can be sunk easily by airplanes. They have four submarines, three, I think, Russian submarines, but they're quite old. They were built in 95, 96. What shape they're in, probably bad. Are they noisy? Yeah, by now. Their air force has been pretty well decimated. Their pride and joy, which were the F-14s that were sold to the Shah originally, which they kept running partly, were destroyed by, at least six of them have been destroyed by the Israelis, three by drones and three by air attack. They never got off the ground. Then they're stuck with some F-5s, but they're very short range. And they may have some, still have some F-4s, US F-4s, and some Mirage jets, but I doubt they can use them. I mean, they may try, but I think it would be very difficult for them. The best thing they could do is try to fire weapons from the shoreline, and that'll be suppressed. And by the way, everyone keeps talking about what Israel, what the US, Saudi Arabia has a very big air force, a very big air force.
Do you think the Saudis will play?
If they're threatened, yes, indeed.
So closing the Red Sea certainly threatens them, always has threatened them.
It's closing the Persian Gulf
And the
threats.
Persian Gulf on the other side, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to like Persian Gulf being shut down. That's their main oil artery. Same with the UAE, also has a big air force. These guys are not without capabilities. They have AWACS, they have tankers, they have F-15s, they have Eurofighters, they have all kinds of stuff. Lots of it. How good they are, I don't know. Probably
So,
medium, but that's good enough.
all they have to do is
Iranians are bad,
decide.
so huh?
So all they have to do is decide. They
They
have
have to be,
capability.
well, they have to realize they're under attack. If they're under attack, they're going to coordinate with us, of course. They already are because they've opened up the Prince Sultan Air Base to the U.S. We've sent lots of aircraft, F-22s, F-35s, F-16s, and stuff like that, to Prince Sultan. In the past, we couldn't do that. They didn't want to get involved. Well, now they want to get involved. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if the Iranians really try to do this, which I'm skeptical of because I think it's very hard for them to do it and it'll backfire miserably on them, it will bring the Saudis and the UAE into the war,
Well, my understanding is that the
which they may like.
Saudis and UAE and Jordan actually have been working with Israel
They
to
have.
mitigate threats. So basically, they're kind of in it already, but maybe they'll come in a bigger way.
Well, it's another matter when you put your jet fighters in the air.
So we have a comment from a listener that says, news reports coming in now say that Iran may shortly launch attacks against U.S. bases across the Middle East, in Bahrain and Qatar, et cetera. So
Yes.
not to close the straits, but to actually attack U.S.
They
bases.
may, and then they'll have another visit from B-2s.
Okay.
I mean,
Just
look,
asking.
you've already evacuated some people from those areas, non-essential people, because we know that could happen. But what are they going to attack with? Missiles?
I would assume so.
Yeah, because an aircraft don't work. So maybe missiles, but I don't know how many are left that they can launch. The Israelis have been working hard to destroy their launchers.
Right. More even than the missiles is the launchers, because
Well,
I
yeah, I
guess a
mean,
missile without a
the
launcher doesn't help you
missile
very
without a
much.
launcher is not a missile. It's just a piece of metal. I mean, it can't do anything.
So we always get an optimistic question from someplace. This optimistic question comes from Jerusalem.
I'm very optimistic, by the way, so.
We're going to go, when we get to the end
Okay.
here, we're going to be optimistic. But anyway, a listener in Jerusalem says, do you think Iran will negotiate with Israel? Do you think airlines will be resuming flights to and from Israel in the near term? So I guess he's asking, is this going to decline in lethality? Do you see a decline in
Well, there's
lethality?
already a decline in lethality. There's less rockets from Iran and less drones being launched because they're being destroyed. Will they negotiate with Israel? Absolutely not. Not this regime. No way. They have no intention of it. Will they surrender to the United States? Absolutely not. Or negotiate with the United States? Absolutely. I don't think so. I think They're in it for the end game. And the end game, they keep talking about annihilating Israel, annihilating the United States, all this rhetoric nonsense coming out of their mouths. But the truth of the matter is that they're being ground down. And, if Israel is able to go after secondary targets like the police stations and the prison, then that tells you two things. One is a good idea, but it also tells you that they can do it because they're running out of their own targets. I mean, they don't need to worry about the missiles as much as they were before. So there's a general sense in my mind that this is starting to change form from Iran's ability to retaliate and try and inundate Israel, to a pressure on the regime to go away, to collapse. And I think that's what the Israelis are trying to achieve, and I'm sure that's what Washington hopes to see.
But lest we get too optimistic, there's always a listener who will go the other way and says, what is the prospect of Iran exercising biological or chemical capabilities?
I don't know how much they really have in that respect. It's a different era from the era when the Iraqis would put chemical warheads on their Scuds and launch them. I don't know that these big missiles have a chemical capability. The reason is that to have a chemical capability, you can't just smash it into the ground. If you smash it into the ground, chemicals don't do anything. They evaporate because the
Right.
fireball destroys them. So they have to be released above above ground at a certain altitude. You need specialized equipment for that. And I don't think the long range rockets that Iran has are capable of it. So, I mean, I could be wrong about this, but I haven't seen any evidence of it. And there's no talk about it. Usually you get talk. So I don't think they're in that position. So hopefully I'm right, but I can't guarantee it.
I always hope you're right. I mean, it's just like a
Yeah,
function
me
of
too.
how we do things here.
It's when scotch comes in handy.
Yeah, that's a good idea too. Okay, so we're running through our question list here, and here's somebody. I'm reading current information. Attacks underway versus Al Udeid Air Force Base in Qatar. So
Oh,
there's
they
going to be more
started.
for us to talk about.
Well,
Well,
if that's actually happened, then we'll be coming back to see the Iranian. The U.S. will be coming back to see the Iranians. That's why we have those 100 plus airplanes in Prince Sultan. That's what they're there for.
okay, so as we are sort of coming.
And by the way, I think that'll change Trump's view of regime change.
How come you always answer my question before I ask it?
We've been married a long time.
We have, yes. Okay, fine. So let's try to find one that you can't answer before I ask it. Here's a question that says, what's your best guess about how Iran responds to all of this? I think the other comment, which is that the attacks are underway at the moment, is kind of the answer to that, isn't it?
Well, if that's true, then the Iranians are committing suicide.
And we're going to help.
Oh, we can't not help. I mean, if they attack a U.S. base and U.S. people, then we're going to respond. We have to. There's no alternative. You can't attack the United States and go to sleep. U.S. go to sleep. Not possible. Not with this administration. Anyway, the last one knows the story. But this administration, no way. We will launch serious attacks on the Iranians. They won't like it.
So here's a question. Do you think President Trump understands the duplicity of Qatar? Which leads to my question, which is since Qatar actually was part of the face of Iran and the money of Iran and the distribution system for Iran, why would the Iranians go after even a US facility? Why would they take on Qatar first?
Those are stupid.
Oh, wait. I don't think anyone ever gave us that answer to any question I ever asked.
Well, they've proven to be utterly stupid. So what else is new? I
Okay.
mean, the whole nuclear program was stupid. I mean, they were out of their minds. And they still are. And it's tragic, but it's stupid. I mean, because they do not, they have boosted themselves with propaganda saying, they're this all powerful regime, and they're going to conquer the Middle East, and they're going to destroy Israel. They had a big sign which was now destroyed in the middle of Tehran, said, they count down to the total destruction of Israel and all that stuff. I mean, they believe their own nonsense.
Or they believe that dying for the cause is the cause,
Well,
right?
that's the nonsense.
Well, I guess it's nonsense. I mean, it
Mean,
is to those
it's
of us.
nonsense because they're illogical.
Well, okay, so that's sort of the end of the conversation. We look at things differently, perhaps, than they do. And for our president, who is fundamentally logical and transactional, where he thinks you can make an offer and someone will accept your offer, and if they accept your offer, or that will make you a counteroffer. That sort of thing is thinking that is not common in certain parts of the world, including Iran. So maybe we're just going at this the wrong way by thinking logically when they think, how do you want to say it?
Well, for 40 years, we've given Iran a free lunch. We didn't try to stop their programs in a real way. We didn't challenge them. And we actually gave them billions of dollars in US dollars. I mean,
We did.
completely out of our minds to do that sort of thing. What were we buying? We were buying more missiles, more nuclear, more craziness, more people being hanged for crimes they didn't commit. I mean, more suppression, more human rights violations, more Hamas, more Hezbollah, more. I mean, we sinned. I mean, basically we sinned. We let them get away with it and we helped them do it. So I think that now it's different. Thank God.
Okay, so I'm going to come to the end of the program. I got to read you this one, though. An anonymous attendee writes, "I love your husband. He's fabulous." So, on that note, I will say to you, thank you for giving us the time and the expertise and the better understanding of what we're looking at. We still don't know the answer to the big questions, like what's going to happen and who's going to make it happen. But I think we have a better idea of what's making things happen in the region. And that, to me, is a very important part of what we want to learn. What are we looking at? How do we look at it? So, last question. You can say thank you to this anonymous attendee that likes you.
Thank you. I, of course, appreciate that.
But you said that you were optimistic.
Yeah.
Why?
Because Iran is committing suicide. It's that simple. I mean, they're crazy. They're asking for it and they'll get it. I mean, that's, simple. That's not very deep philosophical insight. It's just plain common sense. If you bomb an American base, forget about it. You're going to be toast. I mean, we have a huge amount of air power to bring to bear on these guys, and we will. We will. I mean, if the Iranians have attacked our base, they're toast, is my opinion. So I'm very optimistic. I think that the days of the Khomeini and this bunch of thugs is coming to an end.
I'm stopping right there because that's a great place to stop. And I like to stop on an optimistic note. And also, I want to remind you, our viewers, that this was an emergency meeting. I'm glad we had it. I think this was great. I learned a lot. Hope you learned a lot. But our regular webinar is on for Thursday. We have Jennifer Dyer, commander in the United States Navy, retired. And Jennifer is an expert in a lot of these areas. And so we figured that between Monday and Thursday, you get Steve now, you get Jennifer on Thursday.
She's
Maybe by
great.
the
You
end of the week,
don't want to miss her.
no, as Steve says, we don't want to miss, you don't want to miss Jennifer Dyer. Come back and join us on Thursday. Thursday is a regular webinar, so please sign up on our website, click the thing, give us your stuff, and we'll send you the link. But thank you for joining us. And thank you, Steve. This was really great. I have only one question left. What's for dinner?
You'll find out when you get home.
Okay, I'm coming home. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.